Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and we're going to talk about real estate today, but not just another standard transaction. The main message we're going to be putting out there is that there are certain realities to the residential real estate market that everyone should be aware of, and to make sure we are following and working with ethical people who are committed to the home buying and selling sector. And as we were getting down to this recording today, it was Alec was out there just saying, you know, people who really care and finding people that really care. And we're going to go and we're going to unwind and talk through some of the stuff and the platforms from their perspectives, how real estate really works and how things could change. And that we're hoping you're going to take away some knowledge about the residential real estate space. And they have built a free tool to connect with the best real estate agent or advisor team. And hopefully you have a newfound perspective on housing in America. And when we say a new perspective on housing, I'm super stoked to be having Scott Hicken, who's done a couple episodes with me in the past, but he's the one that makes the magic happen behind the scenes. And this is a buddy of his that I'm going to let him do the introduction of the why of Alec and why Scotty wanted to turn on the mic with me today. And so it's super exciting to have Scotty here with me. And, you know, I'm in that gooey middle. I've spent 25-ish years in this. I've had the pleasure of, I bought my home, my first house when I was 18 years old and rented it to my college buddies. And I did this creative stuff that how do we get creative as we move forward in real estate? Because it's getting much harder to do that American dream, right? And so what is going on with the current real estate market? And where the hell are all these houses at, right? And it's like, so I put myself in Scotty's shoes and said, Scotty, let's talk to somebody who's trying to make a change about this. And then you step up to the mic to say, how can you buy a house, right? And that's one of the things that's passionate for me of the leaders of the Art of Construction Tribe of how do we move this thing forward? And one of the things that we're going to be talking about is that institutions buying homes. So is this a problem or not? And should contractors care about what happens to the homes that they're building? I sure hope you do if you're leaders of the Art of Construction Tribe. And that's why we're talking about this. So Scott Hicken, welcome to the show. You've been on a few of these. Excited to have you as my guest co-host. What's your perspective for today?
Thank you, Devin. And hello once again to the Art of Construction Tribe. I'm really happy to be back on the mic talking with Devin and my buddy Alec Weichel. So a little bit about my perspective here. You know, I've been producer of the Art of Construction podcast for 3.5 years now, just about. And really, if there's one thing I've learned in my time doing this podcast, is that the home and the construction of the home and the process that goes from the builder to the homeowner is truly one of the most important parts of the American economy. I mean, I think that's kind of basic and it goes without saying, but really, I think about that so much now. And I'm 26 years old, and my perspective is that truly, my generation, in my opinion, will be screwed if we don't fix the problems with the housing market, right? The American dream rests on owning a home, right? Building that equity, having that piece of wealth that no one can take away from you. That really is central to the American dream. And if I'm being honest, people my age, when we think about our chances of having a home in the near future, they are extremely bleak. Like, people that are doing really, really well are able to go out there and buy a home, maybe in like a less expensive area or way out of the city center. But if you want to have what our parents had, what our grandparents had, really just coming out of college, coming out of like 5 or 10 years of your first job and buying a home, it does not seem that good of a market for us to do that. And my other perspective, and this is a quote that I got from Steve Burrows, who, you know, is one of our top rated podcast guests here in Art of Construction. He said, houses are built for profit. Homes are built for people. So a lot of what we're talking about today is the way that homes are essentially like an asset investment class more than they are actually built for people. And I'm just going to read a few things from the articles that me and Alec talked about before this podcast to get us going with some background data. So Modern economics has created a fairly simple and time-tested equation. If the risk-adjusted return of a given investment are sufficiently attractive, capital flows towards it. In recent years, very few asset classes have had a better risk-adjusted return than real estate. As a result, capital has flowed towards real estate in droves. This is, of course, of great interest to the average citizen because real estate tends to be the primary shelter for most individuals and families, as well as the primary source of wealth. And there's a lot of implications here. Many existing homeowners are sitting on substantial paper gains. The housing supply and inventory is extraordinarily constrained, creating unusually high barriers to entry. Largely a result of that, elevated prices are another significant factor to prospective new home buyers. And investors, as Devin just talked about, increasingly institutional investors are beginning to compete with those same individual buyers for residential properties. So that's a huge factor of all this. But then on the flip side, there's also, is there enough new construction happening? Are the investors the problem, or is there really not enough new construction happening? California alone has an estimated shortage of 3 million housing units. From New York to California, cities and states have amassed a really pitiful record of blocking housing construction and failing to meet the rising demand with adequate supply. Many of the people who are talking about these institutional buyers have city councils and state governments or are surrounded by zoning laws and local ordinances that make home construction something between really hard and impossible. You know, through law and custom, our country has encouraged people to buy and cherish their houses. But by asking Americans to see their homes as a precious investment vehicle, these laws activate a scarcity mindset and sow the seeds of NIMBYism, which is not in my backyard. Don't dilute my equity with new construction. And one final piece of background is during the Senate Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee that happened kind of earlier this year, Elizabeth Warren was calling out private equity firms for this very thing, talking about how they're grabbing all the homes, keeping hold of them, and residential home buyers being blocked out of the market. So the institutional people come back and they say, you know, that's not true. We have a small amount of homes, but the new construction is really the problem. So I just wanted to read one quick stat here. In 2021, in the third quarter of 2021, the city of Atlanta, institutional buyers are responsible for 40% of single home family home purchases. And in Atlanta's five-county region, investors as a whole were responsible for 76% of the evictions filing at the end of the year. So when people are treating homes as investments, they're a little more quick to evict people. They're a little more quick to not be as personal. Basically, there's just a ton going on with the housing market. I'm really excited to dive into it today. On the podcast, we have Alec Weichel. Me and Alec actually grew up together in Santa Clarita, California. We went to junior high and high school together. And Alec, in the past 2 years, has founded the company ListQuick. So ListQuick is trying to be the premier place to find ethical real estate agents for home buyers and sellers. So me and Alec have had a lot of great conversations in the past couple of years as he's been building up this platform while I've been helping to build up Art of Construction. And so we're very excited to have this conversation. What do you say? Should we lock in, Devin, and get to know Alec?
Awesome, man. I'm super excited to hear the perspectives, some fresh perspectives from a couple of super cool dudes. Scotty, let's do this. Lock and load. What's your favorite beverage?
I'd have to go with vitamin water. Always stocked for me.
There you go. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
There's definitely a handful. It's hard to pick one, but the one place that calls to me the most would probably be Hawaii.
Give us one story from that.
Well, this is, you know, less exciting less of a great time, but there was one time that we got delayed in the Oahu airport for 22 hours. So I got to become a resident of the airport and have a newfound appreciation for being outside.
There you go. Well, what do you like to do outside of real estate that we're going to be bringing these perspectives into how we can build better buildings that we passionately call the art of construction?
Yeah, I mean, you know, some more straightforward stuff. I like creating music. I like playing games. But honestly, one of my favorite things to just like be still and do is creative problem solving. I think that, you know, ideating around the spaces of, you know, homelessness or unhoused people across America or sustainable housing or, you know, even what we're going to talk about today, you know, institutional buyers and stuff like that. I just, I like kind of sitting with it and looking at it from different angles and less of the group think and just kind of being like, okay, you know, what could be possible in these areas?
Well, there's a great lead in for your passions all coming together that we're really excited to be talking about some fresh perspectives and what we can do to solve this crazy crisis when it comes to the American dream of home ownership. What led you to being the CEO of ListQuick?
Yeah, so I went to the University of Nebraska and majored in advertising there. And it was a great experience, and I learned a lot and was exposed to, you know, a lot of emerging opportunities via the internet. And basically, I, you know, kind of had some self-reflection and said, you know, before we jump into trying to be an employee somewhere, let's see if we can bring our own ideas and kind of create our own company. And so I knew I had some background in digital advertising and just some personal faith in myself that I could understand what was needed in a given area. And I had the most background knowledge in real estate. My dad has worked in real estate for 31 years, so my whole life. And I just have a lot of background knowledge from being around it, you know, and going on listing appointments since I was 5 years old. And so I thought, you know, what can we do there? And the original idea was tailored digital advertising for individual agents, which is still very needed and is offered, you know, by other companies. But when I pitched that to my dad and some other people that worked with him, the idea of a referral network came up where agents could refer clients to each other, which is a standard practice in real estate. Say you're a realtor in Los Angeles and you have someone moving, you know, to a suburb outside of Dallas. And they need a good agent to work with there to buy their new home. Let's say, you know, Neil knows someone great in South Dallas and he connects them. That agent over there will pay him a referral fee for teeing up the business. And that's, you know, been going on for decades in real estate. But a lot of agents, especially with COVID, people were relocating and going to different states and different areas. A lot of agents would lose out on referral opportunities because they either didn't have someone there or, you know, the person they used to have there, they weren't super confident in anymore. And you don't want to give a bad referral, right? Because then that's, you know, it's like negative marketing for yourself. So basically, long story short, we put in the work to vet out real estate agents across the country, looking at their reviews, cross-referencing them with other agents that they may have worked with before. It just kind of like this triple vetting process. And so like one thing that we did was we would look at agents' reviews, rating them from lowest to highest. And then if they had, you know, reviews less than 4 stars, we would look at those and decipher why those were. And coming from an agent's perspective, it's really nice to be able to tell when a review is legitimate and when it's not, right? So there are lots of things that can happen in the process of buying or selling a house that may or may not be your agent's fault. And so, you know, when I was reading these reviews, I was able to tell, okay, yeah, this person dropped the ball here multiple times. They, you know, are out of the running. Or, you know, this review really isn't fair and it's their only 1-star review. So being able to have that perspective and not just have, you know, an algorithm running numbers of which agent is doing the most production or selling the most homes or, you know, garnering the most reviews. We really took a full 2 years to parse through all the information. I mean, there's over 1.5 million licensed real estate agents across the country. And you know, we only have less than 1,000 in our network because there's really only a select few that are truly, truly dedicated, to their career. You know, realtors, with all due respect, they kind of have a reputation similar to lawyers, right? When you need one, you need one. There are a lot of licensed practitioners out there that, you know, I probably wouldn't recommend or refer my sister or cousin to use. But there are a select few that are really good. And we just want people to make sure or have the ability to work with those people so that there's less horror stories, because ultimately we're talking about people investing in their most valuable asset, and also their home, their house, right? It's where they live. It's where most things happen for them. And so this is an important space. We want to make sure the public is being taken care of, and the agents that are really committed to their craft are rewarded as well.
I love it. So California to Nebraska, that's testing out some different areas and taking your digital schooling to then the real estate with your mentor, your dad, that you lived those shoes and learned how, what we always talk about on the Art of Construction is connecting the right technologies to the right handshakes. And so that you went to school and you lived that for many years. And then you went out there and said, wait, my dad has been crushing it for all these years, but I went to school and this, let's systemize these handshakes. That's what I heard from you. And then we have to figure out how to have this digital world to be credible, right? And find the actual genuine hustlers out there, because you hear about, you know, agents and accountants, yuck, right? Millions of these. And how do we get down to the thousand? And then to make sure your cousin is business legit, right? Instead of this referral network. That's what I'm hearing, if the shoes you are filling, right? And so what is ListQuick, and what does it do?
Right. So ListQuick is a website. So if you Google ListQuick or go into your address bar and type in listquick.net, you will get to our site. And then once you get there, it's really simple. Our main goal is to, if you're ready to sell your property or buy a property, but we really want to help out sellers. If you're ready to sell your property, you put in your property address, your name and phone number, and basically we connect you with the vetted out agent for you in that area. And we aim to be really transparent about it. So, you know, we're not going to take your information and send it to every realtor with a working brain in your area, like some of the other sites do. You're not going to get called by 10 people, you know, immediately after putting in your information. It's a very purposeful site. You'll go to listquick.net, you'll put in your property address. We will call you or text you or email you, depending on what you select as your preference, to follow up and make sure that, you know, you're an actual person who owns this property and who's looking to sell it. And then we'll basically put you in touch with the best person to help you do that. And, you know, I think the ultimate goal is to scale and create it to be even a more tailored service. So, you know, if you own what is considered a luxury property, we have someone who specializes in that. If you own a condo, we have someone who specializes in that. And if you own land, we have someone who specializes in that. So that's, I think, you know, the future of ListQuick, and making it so it's really easy and effective for people to connect with someone who is really committed to helping them out so that everyone involved has a good experience.
Yeah. And Alec, when we were kind of talking in the last year or so about all of this, one thing that kept coming up is the need for some more thought leadership from the real estate world about kind of exposing the public to what's going on behind the scenes. You've linked me with The Real Deal. That's a great like real estate kind of news thing that I've been following on Instagram to learn some more, because it really is kind of the most important but least understood industry in a way. So I kind of teed some up at the beginning, but, you know, from our conversation, what are some factors of the current real estate market that are really driving this crazy housing shortage and everything with the crazy prices right now? And then for our listeners out there, the contractors and affiliates, how do these factors relate to construction?
Yeah. So briefly, I know that a lot of your audience is probably familiar with the dynamics around what has caused a spike in housing prices over the last 2 years. But for anyone that may not be familiar, I'll just briefly go over what happened, right? Why people have been talking about housing and unaffordability and inventory. So once COVID hit, there was a lot of uncertainty around what was going to happen, right? And so people who maybe were planning on selling their house in 2020 decided not to because they didn't have anywhere to go. Everyone was told to stay at home, right? So the amount of inventory or houses available for sale was down a lot, was very low. And there were still people interested in buying, right? Especially with not knowing how long this was going to last and needing a place to stay. Some people were thinking, okay, it's time to, you know, get out of this renting situation and get equity in something. We don't know how long this is going to last. So there were a lot of buyers, not a lot of sellers. Simple supply and demand tells us, you know, the value of things goes up when there's more people interested than providing them. And then the builders and developers, you know, they had way less people, employees working because, you know, people were staying at home and there was still uncertainty around who's essential and how do we go about this. And then, of course, the supply chain issues and the cost of lumber and materials spiked. So all of these things, you know, created this little cloud storm, whatever, where the price of housing in most major markets across the US increased 15 to 25% in less than 2 years. So just to give a little bit of perspective there, most major markets of people 100,000 or more will see anywhere from 2 to 4% appreciation in a given year, right? That would be, you know, relatively normal. So 15 to 20% in a year to 18 months is crazy, crazy growth. So, you know, we're at this point now where a single market can only grow so much before it has to stabilize, right? It's going to get to a threshold where people can no longer afford the prices that it's gotten to. And so we're starting to see that now. If you follow ListQuick, you might see the market updates that we share on Instagram. And pretty much across the board, whether you're looking at any of, you know, the markets that saw this kind of appreciation, right? 15, 17, 20, 23%. Boise, Idaho, you know, Austin, Texas, Riverside, California, some of the suburbs of California outside LA and outside San Francisco. New York now in the, you know, kind of more post-pandemic era where some of the people that fled to Jersey and the suburbs are coming back to the city or, you know, went down to Florida. Now they're going back to New York because it's just too much of a weather shock or culture shock. So, you know, these are all things that, contribute to where we're at now. We are having or seeing stabilizing prices, meaning that, you know, less than 50% of homes are selling for over asking price. They're selling at asking price or under. And also, you know, interest rates obviously play a big factor into the buying pool. And those haven't shown signs of yielding too much, right? They just got raised a couple weeks ago again. So all of these things together, we still have a shortage of inventory. As Scott, you mentioned earlier, California alone, we're about 3 million units under. So, you know, we're going to need builders, developers to come back and figure out how to work with local ordinances to increase the level of inventory. And ideally, everyone who are experts in their own field in the real estate sector kind of work together the way that we are now to discuss all of the holes that are seen, whether it be, you know, sustainability in housing or housing availability or whatever it be, to really address this issue. Because you're right, Scott, it's one of the biggest issues facing our generation, without a doubt.
Yeah, and I really think just not enough people are talking about it. Like, I'm consistently mind blown that I don't turn on the news almost every night and see things about the housing shortage. I mean, you do occasionally, and obviously, like, the conversation about interest rates and the conversation about the pricing is a huge national conversation, but I think less in the national conversation is kind of the more social, cultural, like all these elements of what it means to own a home and what effect that will have on our generation if we cannot do that. I mean, you know, you and me, Alec, we grew up in Santa Clarita, which is like an amazing community in Northern LA. And I like to say we grew up on kind of as picturesque American dream type streets as we possibly could have. And there was so much value that came from that, right? Like, we like to kind of hate on our hometown when we're teenagers, but when I look at it now, I'm like, wow, like what an amazing sort of experience we had growing up. And a lot of that was just because of what an amazing, stable community that it was, with all these amazing families that own their home and build equity. And obviously the amount of equity that was built in our, you know, neighborhood over the course of 10, 20 years really helped out a lot of families. So this is a huge conversation piece that I always love talking about now. And one thing that I want to bring to the conversation when you talk about builders and developers trying to figure this whole thing out is the build to rent game and just the whole rental market as a whole. That is a huge conversation piece right now about how to fix this is, oh, let's just build these build to rent communities, or let's just get as many rental units out there as possible, because with all the crazy prices and everything right now, like they're not gonna be able to afford it. So let's just get some build to rental communities. A few stats: investors will put $40 billion into build to rent development in the next 18 months. That's according to Hunter Housing Economics. Adam Newman, the founder of WeWork, is launching a new company called Flow that is all about this exact thing, build-to-rent communities, and he just got $1 billion valuation in this huge, crazy investment. Could be a whole other podcast about whether that was the right move or not, considering what he did to WeWork. But all of that aside, from your perspective, Alec, as someone that's trying to be a thought leader and lead this network of real estate agents trying to help people get the American dream, does our generation want to own homes, or are we comfortable renting, as some of these build to rent people would lead us to believe?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I want to address that this conversation of the real estate sector in general is going to touch on a lot of things, right? And it branches out into different areas. You know, owning your home versus renting your home, you know, with a landlord in charge, you could make certain arguments about how that affects mental health. But going back to the question of owning homes versus, you know, this rent to own or subscription model, I think that there's a lot of uncertainty around where this all is going. And I think it's rooted around the issue that there's two ways of looking at housing or residential real estate. There's the housing is a basic human need, right? Food, water, shelter. And also the housing is one of the best investment vehicles available. Right. Real estate is one of the greatest things that you can invest in over time. And that's demonstrable over the last 50 years. That being said, I think that there's so much cloudiness around the future of the economy and millennials and Gen Z with financial security. And, you know, some of us are figuring out new ways to become profitable and sustainable. And whether that be through a TikTok channel or a small business or whatever it may be, all these new ways that people are making money. There's still the flip side of that, which is, you know, not everyone can be a TikTok star. Not everyone can be making $10,000 to $20,000 a month and, you know, going on, you know, influencer paid vacations, or, you know, hopping from their apartment subscription in New York to their apartment subscription in LA. You know, this is still, it's just a reflection of the wealth gap in this country and how it's just becoming more and more precipitated, where I'm sure some people will be able to have the means to do, you know, a rent to own or an apartment subscription, you know, offering. That being said, when it comes down to it, owning a home is definitely the preferable option here, right? Would I rather spend $3,200 a month renting a place that is burned every month, or $2,300 a month building equity in something that I can own and then sell? I can't speak for our whole generation or the next generation, but I can tell you that I would much rather be creating equity in something that I own and is an asset to me than renting and paying someone else.
And so would I. And so with Devin at age 18, apparently. I didn't know you bought a house at age 18, Devin. That's awesome.
Well, and that's the part where I wanted to come back around of like this whole like this in the news of they just don't want to sit down. They just want to be able to go and be free, and they want to be TikTok influencers. And I love, Alec, when you talk about like that's actually a reflection of our wealth gap, because there's so few people that are actually making hundreds and thousands of dollars a month doing that. It's mm-hmm. a lot of other people that are sitting there following it saying, how do I do that? But they're not actually making any money. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to get back to the good old fashioned hard work, right? Like I had to take a risk when I bought the house to get my parents to co-sign. And that's where we're going to go into. Like, I want to talk about why we think there are so many institutional buyers of residential homes. Mm-hmm. And I think back of the story of just little old Devin here that is now this gooey middle of I've bought and sold several houses and worked with several different people along the way. You learn so much about that. And I think it's this mindset of the way it works to where the time frame of when you buy a house, it's like, I'm not going to own it for 30 years. And it's just like this weird juxtaposition of the days are long sometimes and the years are short. And you have to manage those expectations of who's going to take the risk with you. Mm-hmm. And in my case, it was my parents that they said, you go to college and you give me the bill at the end and we'll pay it. And I was like, wow, I was on the verge of not going to college. And I was like, you know, damn, if I can go and then I'm going to get a check at the end. And I did it. And getting that check was like so rewarding. But before that, he said, well, if you're going to go to college, maybe you should, instead of just living in the dorms or screwing off for those years, maybe we should buy a house to where you fix it up and have your buddies live in it. And I tell you that story is that because what is an institutional buyer? Like, and I think, Alec, that's what you're looking at, that to say it's these different mindsets of being creative. So I'm really curious of hearing my little story, and that's your guys' story, is when you both say, we do want to own a home and we do want to plant our seeds in the ground and let them grow instead of just wander off into the wilderness. That's what I'm hearing from you guys. So, Alec, why are there so many institutional buyers of residential homes popping up?
Yeah, it's a very poignant question right now. The reason is because real estate is a very good investment over time, and there was kind of this period, again, you know, not that I want to harp on it too much, but going back into, you know, that first 12 months of COVID, where there was so much uncertainty and basically every industry collapsed, right? Like everything came to a screeching halt for at least 2 to 6 weeks. And then after that, it was, okay, where do we go from here? What has to stay online, you know, starting to deem things essential. Real estate was pretty much the only big industry that actually did well through COVID, right? So going back to what we were talking about before, 15 to 25% appreciation, in many markets across the country. During wars, during pandemics, during whatever, the capitalism doesn't stop, right? Investors are still trying to keep things going and trying to pivot. And, you know, what one of the investments that made the most sense to double down on was residential housing, particularly because some of the concerns of the 2008 crisis are more alleviated today in terms of no income loans and stuff like that. There's less people that are going to be upside down on their mortgages and defaulting on their homes. So it's a very attractive investment, especially if you're a multi-billion dollar hedge fund, right? And you're not working with, you know, something more of like $50 million in capital. If you can buy up a whole street in Houston, you know, Scott, you mentioned earlier that 40% of homes bought in Atlanta were institutional buyers. Houston is another area that people should look at and be aware. 15% of all homes purchased in 2021 were from institutional buyers. So if you take that national average, 15%, and then you look at Houston, which is 20-25%, and then Atlanta, which is 40%, take the average of that, you know, 1 in 5 homes bought is by an institutional investor. And what do we mean by an institutional investor? We mean hedge funds or large corporations that have, you know, over 100 employees or over $1 billion in market cap, buying up, you know, not just one house on your street, but, you know, multiple houses in given neighborhoods. The reason they're doing this is because they're good investments, right? They will appreciate over time. These companies or hedge funds have the means to hold on to the property over time. They're not going to be worried about property taxes or anything like that. And it's cash flow, right? They can rent these properties out. So it's cash flow that keeps a certain amount of profit coming in. And whenever they want, they can, you know, unload the properties at a time that makes sense. So more or less, that's why institutions were buying up real estate.
Yeah. And the part I'd like to add is that I think the time value of money is not educated like an amortization schedule. It's like, I still struggle with that. And I've been dealing with a lot of different real estate transactions of like what this thing means when you sign on the dotted line of like how the time value of money works. And and one of my idols is Matthew McConaughey. And this, I call it the ultimate forced winter of COVID, where it forced change. And the forced change just forces more people, the rich, to get richer if you're not one of those that if you're sitting on the sidelines, right? And so I'm curious, what else is blocking people from buying homes or building homes when it comes from, how do we get over the F word of fear of this is scary stuff, right? And I think that's the part where a lot of people are just kind of saying, well, why don't I make the money and let others, it's too scary for you, sonny boy, right? So what's your take of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things that I'm sure Scott will be able to shed light on in terms of, you know, exclusionary zoning and stuff. But what's blocking people from buying homes? Well, really quick, just going back to the reflection of the wealth gap and something that we'll talk about more in a minute in the building world is more and more jobs are getting automated. Wages have not kept up with, you know, the cost of things in general. And so people just simply can't afford to buy homes, right? There was, you know, some survey that said that roughly 50% of Americans have less than $400 in their bank account. I mean, you know, you can't do 5% down on a $700,000 house with no 5%, you know? So that's a big part of it. And then blocking from building homes, you know, again, there's local ordinances and certain homeowners that don't want more inventory in their area because then they feel that it devalues their home, which is not always true. For example, there's about 20,000 new units that just went in Santa Clarita over by Magic Mountain. And those units have not decreased the value of my home because, you know, they're not the same. So that's something that people need to understand. But also, you know, with certain uncertainty around building materials and the cost of housing, I think builders are just a little bit scared right now, and we need some sort of confidence or unity around that.
Yeah, the confidence and the unity, I think, is key. And like I read at the beginning in my research for this conversation, that NIMBY, that not in my backyard mentality, I really wasn't aware of how much drama and controversy there is across the country as far as zoning and as far as communities not wanting other communities to be built around them, especially when it comes to affordable housing. Those markets, so many communities are like, nope, not around us. You know, that's going to drive down the property value. And what you're talking about, Alec, is like, yeah, SDV, Santa Clarita Valley, is just rapidly expanding. And obviously those new neighborhoods are not bringing down the quality or the amount of money that the other homes are worth because it's still a very desirable place to live. So I think there's a kind of a whole national conversation around zoning laws. Crested Butte, Colorado was a super interesting conversation that wasn't even just about zoning laws, but there's a great Vice News video about the housing shortage in Crested Butte, Colorado, one of the nicest mountain towns here. And in the end, Crested Butte is surrounded by all this farmland, like acres and acres and acres of farmland. And those would be great to build houses on. But the problem is that these farmers that own it are like, no, you know, this is our land. We've owned it for 40, 50 years. And you're not going to come in and build houses on it. We don't want you to. And everyone's mad at the town of Crested Butte. Like, why didn't you plan for this? Why just now are you asking people 40, 50 years now, after they've owned this land, about, hey, can we build homes on it? You know, you should have planned for this from the beginning. So there's a lot of planning as far as where to put homes on land that never seemed to happen. And now we're really trying to scramble to figure that out. But so now to touch back on something you said earlier, Alec, and this is something, again, that I've become really passionate about. You mentioned like the mental health thing as far as owning a home. There's this amazing article, if anyone wants to have a good read, called The Housing Theory of Everything by some academics. And the main idea of it is they say Western housing shortages do not just prevent many from ever affording their own home. They also drive inequality, climate change, low productivity growth, obesity, and even falling fertility rates. So this is a great read if everyone wants to go look up The Housing Theory of Everything about how owning your own home and the lack of the ability to do that in today's society can be the contributing factor to almost every problem Western society faces today. When you think about the low fertility rates, people not having as many children, so we're not going to have new generation to replace us, the low productivity growth, you think about city centers like San Francisco and what that does for the productivity of the country. Imagine if we had 8 San Franciscos, right? Imagine if we had so many more big city centers that had really good property that we could actually go to be productive, but we don't, which is why San Francisco is like the most expensive place to live in the country. Obesity, you know, like people, if we don't have good communities where people can kind of walk around and we're always having to live far outside of the city to afford it and then drive into the city, drive back out of the city, that leads to obesity. If we don't have good places where people can live in the neighborhoods where they work and they just have to be in a car all the time, you know, obviously that leads to lower health. So with all this in mind now, like, I welcome some of your thoughts. And also, what do you think are some other effects of the housing shortage in America?
Yeah, it's, I mean, this is really kind of the crux of the conversation, right? Is there's so many different, well, this is because of this, and this is because of this in this conversation, whether you're talking about housing or the economy and in America in general. And that's why thank you for having me on here and having this conversation, because we need more people who are paying attention to their specific thing, right? Like mine is residential real estate, yours is the building construction world. We need more people to have conversations like this so that we can connect the dots of, okay, here's all of these weird branches that come out and are, you know, mal effects of how we're operating right now. How do we take a minute to stop and have a conversation and plan to alleviate some of these things? So, yeah, I mean, inequality for sure. If you don't build more inventory, then you have that scarcity issue, right? Where you have people who have owned their homes for 20, 25 years, and they're sitting on a bunch of equity that they could sell and, you know, go live the last third of their life or whatever and be fine. And then you have all the people under them, a generation or two, that are screwed because, you know, like we were saying earlier, that wealth gap, that TikTok influencer person could afford the house, but most other people can't. Climate change, obviously, we need to be more sustainable and mindful with the way that we're building, particularly master plan communities, you know, water reclamation, solar power, things of this nature that we need to be investing in. And, you know, again, just going back to the idea that housing is one of those vital human needs. And if we don't take a minute to stop moving a million miles an hour and to have these conversations and specifically the people with resources and capital, incentivizing this, right? Playing more of the long game, more of the Eastern philosophy, more of the, incentivizing the great minds and the people who are spending a lot of time paying attention and ideating around this, giving them the time to be able to keep doing that and keep working on ideas and progress and not having to try and figure out how to make money 24/7 because, you know, the traditional means of making a living are evaporating, right? So again, this is a loaded conversation. There's a lot of thoughts I have on this issue, but overall, we need more people having conversations like this. We need more people with political power, both local and national, to give this more attention and not get angry about it, but to be invested in it and to have people have these conversations, right? Have the builders be able to share their side of you know, issues with creating inventory, have local ordinances share their side. And if we get enough people sharing their side of the branch or the whole of what's going on in this overall Jenga house, eventually we will figure out how to make real change. And again, making real change in this space trickles out into all of these things that we're just talking about: climate change, productivity growth, obesity, falling fertility rates. Don't underestimate how much changes in housing or positive changes in housing will affect positive change just in at large in civilization.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned, I like your little thing there where you talked about Eastern culture is much more about the long game than Western society. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just want to note for our listeners, I mean, obviously, no matter what you think about like a country like China and the way they run things, I don't have the exact stat, but like a country like China, their middle class home ownership is way more than America. So like when we think about a country like China, where you might not agree with the way it's ran, but clearly something they're doing is leading to more middle-class home ownership. And I think, and even a country like Japan as well, more capitalist society, the quality of life and the home ownership stats that they have there are just so much better than anything we have here in the States. And so I think there's like a ton that we could learn from other societies that play the long game. It's kind of like what we talk about, Devin, working on your business instead of in your business. The American housing industry needs to do a lot of working on the business instead of just working in it day to day and figuring out how to make money. So we'll circle back on that. But to kind of close the conversation here, Alec, I have a lot of faith that you're going to be a great thought leader in this space going forward in the years in the future. You know, real estate is this thing where I don't think a lot of agents have ever been the people to talk about this, but in the end, you're the ones kind of navigating it more than anyone. So I'm super happy that we got you on the podcast, and I think you're going to kind of help lead a new movement of ethical real estate agents who are actually talking about this stuff, who actually care. And I think the relationship between the construction, building, development community and the real estate agent community is kind of vital to keep these conversations going. So with that, tell us, what are like your future plans for ListQuick?
Yeah. So again, thank you for, you know, giving me the space to share some of this stuff with everyone. And again, there's some really important underlying stuff to this conversation. So I encourage people to, you know, educate themselves as much as they can handle. For the future of ListQuick, if you look at any, you know, company in real estate that's come about in the 21st century, there's always an initial service, and then they fledge out into ancillary services. So, you know, again, just to reiterate, what ListQuick does is gives you a vetted out real estate professional that you can be confident in hiring and helping you with residential real estate needs. Where do we go after that? Well, you know, again, we're still in startup phase. So I want to scale this service so that as many people can be helped as possible. And there's less horror stories of, you know, people being screwed over by a selfish agent or whatever. And then, you know, once we scale this service and people know who we are, and we've got some resources that we're working with, I want to just keep listening to the public and the agents to figure out how we can continue serving them. I think it's really simple, you know, and one of the great things about not having crazy funding right off the bat and a big board of shareholders is that we have the flexibility and agility to do that, right? We can listen to the people that we're serving and make changes on a day's notice because the ultimate decision maker is me and my partner, Blake. So, you know, future plans are just to continue doing whatever is going to help people, whatever is going to bring more transparency to real estate. And honestly, just you had said thought leader earlier. I appreciate that moniker. I really just want to be a source for people to build just knowledge through one of the most important sectors in this country that, as you know, started off the call, one of the biggest and least understood industries in real estate. So helping people be on top of that and then creating a sustainable housing initiative for unhoused people in America, I think would be the big next thing.
Yeah, I love that. At the end of the day, like real estate agents are so many different things to be able to connect all these dots, right? Like it's like the undertone of like the counselor, the matchmaker, the this, to like put all these things together because it's so emotional, because it's such a big deal, right? And so you have to figure out how to put that together. I'm curious, as we do this, as we get ready to close this thing out, What is your crystal ball for the future with technology in residential real estate?
Yeah. Well, I think there's two sides to this question, right? It's the technology in regards to brokerages and the agents, which is kind of more my sphere, and then the technology in residential real estate for the builders and developers. I'll answer the first one first. So, Zillow obviously kind of started off this trend by giving the general public access to the MLS or multiple listing service. So that was the first big piece of real estate tech where people could, non-agents, people, general public could look at what houses were for sale online and see the photos of them. After that, it became connecting with agents or, different forms for real estate agents. So I think we're going to see a lot of interesting competition in the real estate tech space. Compass is an interesting model. They are losing money precipitously. So we'll see if it ends up working out or if they have to keep pivoting as hard as they did recently with layoffs and stuff. But the future of technology in real estate, the one thing that's clear is agents are still central to the transaction. All the intangibles that you just kind of listed before of being a counselor or a therapist or an educator or a negotiator or a marketer, these people that are part of the ListQuick network that are really vetted out and do their jobs really well, they will continue to be central to the transaction. The way that they work will just be different, right? So the forms that they use or the way that they communicate with clients or the way that they show houses, all of these little individual bullet points will be affected by technology, but agents will still remain central to the transaction for a while. And then in terms of the builder developer side, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that you guys have touched on other episodes and will continue to touch on, with prefab homes and the added efficiencies to work sites and, the technology. I think cybersecurity is going to become an interesting point of contention for job sites. Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity if you're willing to find a specific hole or thing that could be made significantly better and focus on that.
Love it. Riches in the niches, baby. What is that one thing for contractors and affiliates you want to leave them to think about that they go out there and crush it to grow their business, Alec?
I'm sure there's a handful of things that people believe should be the thing. From personal experience, outside of, what I study and what I work in, from personal experience, I can tell you there is a lot of opportunity to become like the reputable contractor in your area. There's always the people who will do it for the cheapest, who you're going to be unhappy with when the job's over. There's always one or two that are, super high end and charge a lot. And again, those TikTok influencers can hire them. That's great. But most contractors and affiliates are somewhere in the middle. And it really just comes down to, again, being kind of like the type of agent that we would invite to be part of the ListQuick network. Just be the one that's reputable, right? Be the one that like cares the most. Be the one that will answer questions without worrying about, setting an appointment or, being the person that they're going to use. Just be useful and be committed to what you're doing and have someone like Scott, be in charge of making sure that you're taking care of the stuff that needs to be taken care of in terms of emerging technologies and whatever. But, just be good, like be dedicated to being good and the results will come, because one thing that COVID showed me, especially buying a house during COVID, is that there is room for good contractors and people who want to be like the recommended contractor in their area, because there's just so many not good ones out there, respectfully. So the one thing for contractors and affiliates to grow their business, just be good, offer value without, expectation every time within the boundaries of your business, and utilize reviews If you want like one actionable thing, utilize reviews, get a QR code, get people to make video reviews, post them on social media. If you don't have social media accounts, you're doing it wrong in 2022. So that's what you should do, in my opinion.
Well, good on you, Alex. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get to talk again in the future and keep updating the people on the state of real estate and bringing some positive thoughts to it.
Absolutely, sure. Alec. Great to have you on.
Thanks again, guys. Really appreciate it.
Scott, give us your closing thoughts and then I'll bring us home.
Cool. Well, first closing thought is it was super cool to have a buddy I grew up with on the podcast. We're at the age now in our mid-20s where a lot of us are out there doing our thing, you know, creating new businesses, creating new ways of value for our generation. And I truly think that as far as the value our generation can go after, figuring out the housing market is one of the most important. I don't know what we're going to do at this point if things don't drastically change. There's that construction stat where the world needs 13,000 new homes a year. We talked about the California stat where there's 3 million homes that we don't have that we need right now. These are just enormous, enormous, enormous problems. And I just really am excited to have had a buddy of mine on that is talking about these problems and being a thought leader. And the other thing that I want to touch on is that all of these things are interrelated. So if you're a contractor out there, I really think it's vital that you care about these things, that you think about the way that your city ordinances and your community might be blocking new homes from being built. Think about the way that institutional banks coming and buying up the home that you just put your hard work and sweat and soul into building. Do you want an institution to come in and buy that and use it as an investment? Or do you want to create that home so that a family can actually come in and live the American dream? I think that a lot of what we talk about on this podcast, Devin, is we're trying to elevate the blue collar warriors, the trades, the contractors and affiliates to not just think about their one piece of the puzzle, but to think about the entire puzzle and also envision a new way of doing everything. And I think this was just a lot of fun to have this conversation with Alec, who is going to be a great thought leader on the real estate agent side, to know that we all need to have these conversations together. And hopefully as a contractor listening to this podcast, you're more inspired now to really think about all of these dynamics in the current real estate market, housing shortage, craziness we're experiencing, and what you can do to help.
I love it. And I want to end out by saying, I say this a lot, words matter, right? And I think that's the big thing of, you know, you're shedding light on the NIMBY, and you can Google and find YIMBY and then all these other things. You know, it's yes in my backyard, but this kind of stuff, that's scary to say, I want to shed an ADU, a duplex. I want to tear everything down and make it a 10-plex. Like all that stuff is scary, right? And so words do matter of understanding that. And you have to stop and understand what the words mean. Because what it, you may read it and it may actually mean something very different in the governing body that actually manages how that's done, right? And so that it's not just about the money and the transaction, it's about meaningful change. And so that we have to build buildings. So I kind of want to close out with a story of the Art of Construction podcast is like, I put myself out there and connect a lot of the dots. And a story I'm going to tell actually started from Scott teeing it all up, AOC show 264, which is titled Productizing Real Estate Development. And that was with the Matalon Group, the co-founder and CEO, Alfonso Medina. But the back end of Matalon Group is an investment group called The Blue Room. And The Blue Room has a really cool story. And shout out to Min Young Sun, who invited me to be part of this policy roundtable. And this all started from the kindling of the fireside chat. And I'll raise my hand and say, should I really be going to a policy roundtable? And I say that in all genuine sincerity of saying, like, I'm just in building supplies or I'm just in this. And like, so this was this like elaborate, amazing roundtable that was put on by State Representative Colorado Leslie Herod. And so there was a whole group of people around the table, and it was amazing tribe. And why I tell you this story is like, you have to have people that really believe in you, right? And so I'm assuming, Scott, it was really passionate for you to be able to, someone you believe in, to be able to put them on the Art of Construction platform. But then I end this thing with a story to say, I believe in you, Scotty, when you say this person fits the message where we're going. And you have to sometimes just have to have blind trust, but don't expect what you don't inspect to be able to put yourself in those shoes. And that's what Min has done with his team of investors, where they're going out investing, but they really have a place and a purpose of how they're investing and what we're branding as system build lifestyle or system built structures through the Art of Construction Master Facilitators. And I leave you with this, Tribe. When you get to get put up on a stage and you get to do that, take action just like Alec did. Because who knows who's the next TikTok influencer? But I can tell you, as we closed out on 500,000 listens, and I'm so honored to lead this, it means just as much thinking back when I bought my first house and created shelter for some of my buddies, that people took risk on me. And you have to take risk on those people, and you have to care. You genuinely have to care, and then you have to add value. And so that we want to be this source, and I'm super stoked to have Alex as one of the leaders on the Master Facilitators, because the Art of Construction Tribe here, Scotty, we are now a source when we say, how the heck do you build 13,000 better buildings every day? You care and you add value. And you actually talk about it in a different way to actually say, it's super meaningful for me, Scott, when you and Alex say, Devin, I want to step up to the mic and dang it, I want to own a house. And not just anything, right? Because it then becomes your home. It's not just a 30 amortized thing that someone else is all about. It's a place and a purpose. And we all are trying to find our place and purpose every day, right, Scotty?
Indeed we are.
Awesome. Crush it out there, Tribe.